Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, hey, hello, leavers and unbelievers. Wear your heart on your sleeves, and for this month, the LGBT pluses. We're continuing our focus on the LGBTQIA plus community this month with part two of Ben and Brian's Big Breakfast. And if you haven't tuned into part one, I think it's a good idea that you do that first. But Ben Gresham-Petchell, our guest, decided to tweet Brian, and Brian Houston, the former leader of Hillsong, you might remember. And what do you know if Brian didn't tweet back? And they had a meeting to discuss gay conversion therapy and what should be done. So welcome back, welcome back. There's a huge content warning on this. It's hard stuff, but it's a great story. My name's Tanya. Matt Drapper, or Drapper, is my co-host for this Pride Month here at Leaving Hillsong. And we had the wonderful opportunity of sitting with Ben and discussing his big old breakfast with Brian, coming out of the closet and coming out of Hillsong. And he's got so much joy to share. So let's hit up part two of Ben and Brian's Big Breakfast.
So I tweeted Brian, Tanya, and I tweeted him this, like, I think I said something like, gay people are dying in your church. There is blood on your hands. Now, and how dramatic is that? That's like,
well,
now the filter, I mean, it's not wrong. It's not wrong. Right. But the filtered part of me now probably wouldn't allow myself to do something like that. But back then, the kind of crowd out there, gay twink, decided to tweet Brian. We all know Brian loves Twitter, and he absolutely does love Twitter.
And he loves the drama of it.
He loves the drama of it. So he replied back and he said, I would love to, you know, maybe have a coffee with you, publicly tweeted back. And he said, I'd love to have coffee with you when I'm back in Australia. And so I reached out.
Yeah.
And Brian decided to meet me. And we had, you know, we were kind of going through the dates, you know, when are you available? You know, will we catch up in the hills or the city? And anyway, we'd finally agreed to do a breakfast in Glen Haven, which is where Brian and Bobby lived. And I think they still live today. And we met at Flower Power, which is a nursery, a garden nursery, and they sell plants in Glen Haven. And that was not
nice
too far from where.
Open and outdoors.
Nice and open and outdoorsy.
Public.
Public, and the date was 12th of November 2010, Friday morning. And I remember being so nervous, like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna, like, you know, I'd seen Brian, I'd said hello to him heaps of times in church, but you know, it was just me and him having breakfast, you know. And I was so nervous, and I kind of felt like I was meeting the president, because that's who Brian is, right? Like,
yes.
he was the big man in church, but I also felt like I had the entire weight of the kind of traumatized gay Christian Hillsonger world on my shoulders. And so I wanted to do right by that. I remember I stayed at my parents' house, and I had printed off a table with 10 names on it, 10 names of young queer people at Hillsong, lesbian, gay, bisexual people at Hillsong, and their experiences. And let me be really, really clear that all of our experiences were different. Not everyone had been through a conversion program like me. Mm-hmm. And not everyone had been treated the same way I was treated. I mean, everyone had a negative experience. It was just kind of what level of damage, what level of negativity had these young lesbian, gay, bisexual people gone through? And it was, there was always a story of heartbreak and pain and rejection and confusion and just wanting to belong in a place where they felt like God would love them and their church would love them. And none of them felt that way. And that, I think, is the saddest thing in all of this. I had the names. I had their ages. You know, I used anonymous for people that didn't want to be identified. And I even included email addresses because I thought, you know, maybe Brian might want to email these people and just say, hey, you know what, we actually do love you. There's a space for you. I was going in there trying to advocate for Hillsong to be this place of gay acceptance and gay welcome. And probably at that stage, wanting Hillsong to jump 50 years into the future. And it was a bit unrealistic of me, but I had this great hope that maybe Hillsong would become a gay-friendly place. I had my story. I dressed up nice in a collared shirt and some nice jeans, ready to meet Pastor Brian. And I walked into Flower Power. I sat at a table in the cafe section, and then I saw Pastor Brian walk in. And it was just unreal and overwhelming all at the same time. And I probably had about an hour and a half with him.
Okay.
And it was a very frank, open, candid conversation with him about my experience, about my story, about my hope for the church, about what I'd heard other people go through, about his views on homosexuality. And I didn't sign any sort of non-disclosure agreement. I didn't sign anything saying that I wouldn't share anything. So I actually wrote a blog post straight after. As soon as I got home, I wrote a blog post about it, and I called it My Breakfast with Brian. It's still there. And I wrote a blog post about it and the questions I'd asked Brian, because I felt like people deserve to know as well, because queer people in Hillsong Church got no answers at all, no answers. So we were left to navigate this by ourselves. And at this time, you know, I mean, they'd kind of bring Cy Rogers in. There was no answers. There was nothing kind of for anyone. It was kind of like, figure it out. And when people tried to figure it out, it was always the same. It was like, you're sinful. You're not welcome. Being gay is wrong. And so I thought, I'm just going to ask him these questions. And I did. And I'll never forget how real he felt. In my head, he was like this idol, this, you know, big man, or, you know, kind of this almost like godlike figure. And yet, he was having a really candid conversation with me about gay stuff and homosexuality. And it was just odd and refreshing at the same time. And there's a lot to unpack even in just that.
Yeah, that I wonder in retrospect.
Yeah, I'm so impressed by this.
I mean, it was 12 years ago, but still, I mean, he's an imposing character, Brian, and a mixture of kind of personality aspects, you know, very... Not intimidate, but I mean, he's, you know, he's got a presence now. He's a big figure, and yet kind of just a regular guy. He can do that as well. So it's
It really feels like the kind of old timey LGBTQ kind of protest. You would have someone with very little power meeting with somebody with just immense amounts of power, and just sitting face to face and bringing that list of people. It reminds me of sort of like the protests during the era of, you know, AIDS, and when people would bring people's physical names to the desks of politicians and say to people, these are real human beings. Look them in their eyes. And so I'm interested in this breakfast. On your blog post, it mentions that you felt like Brian was quite nervous himself about meeting her and so on. What do you think that was about?
Yeah, look, he definitely was. And that surprised me. I didn't think he'd be nervous. I mean, because who am I in the scheme of things? But, you know, I think it would be easy for me to go, maybe it was to do with damage control. And, you know, he didn't want me putting the name Hillsong and my experiences, which were quite horrific. He didn't want me putting that out there to the public. And so maybe a bit of it was damage control. But I do genuinely think, even today, even with Brian's failings, I think he still did have a genuine heart for people and for his congregation. I'm not saying he was certainly not perfect. We all know he's not perfect, right? That's part of the reason why we have this podcast. But I do think that at least part of him was good, and part of him felt some sort of level of guilt about what I had gone through, and some sort of level of responsibility about it not wanting to happen again. Because, I mean, even though, I mean, Hillsong didn't become a welcoming place for gay people after this, what it did do, though, it was quite powerful, because he did say to me that he would speak to his youth leaders and he would speak to his staff and he'd speak to the counsellors and he'd share what would happen to me, and he would make sure that gay conversion therapy is not happening at Hillsong and nobody's being referred to it. And what I found out is he did do that. He spoke to his staff, to his youth leaders. And he said to all of them, he said, nobody, I don't want anybody being referred to gay conversion therapy. I don't want anybody advocating for this pathway. So he did do that. So credit where credit's due, right? I mean, Brian and I didn't see eye to eye on everything. And he certainly wasn't, you know, an ally. I wouldn't say he's an ally, but he did give me that commitment and he did follow through with it. And I mean, it still doesn't mean that people didn't fall through the cracks, right? Mm. But at least you had, for the first time, the leader of Hillsong saying to staff, you were not to do this. You were not to refer people to gay conversion programs. And he also was very candid with me at saying that he himself didn't support gay conversion. He also didn't affirm gay people. Mm. He certainly didn't do that, but he didn't believe that conversion worked either, which was a very candid, kind of frank position. I think it was weird because I expected to go into there thinking that I would be the one being vulnerable with him, and I was, but he was also really vulnerable with me. Mm.
This was a life-saving breakfast, you know, ultimately. Yeah.
And I'd hoped that it would be, because honestly, it was so horrible what I went through, and I think anybody that is passionate and advocates from a place of experience, I think you do it because you know that you don't want anybody else to go through that and be where you were at and feel that sense of shame.
Yeah.
Because when you feel that sense of, it's Pride Month, right? But, and Drapa, you know what I'm talking about. But when you feel that sense of liberation and freedom as somebody who is queer, as somebody who's gay, you can't go back in the closet anymore. You've seen the light, and you no longer can hide it. You want everybody else to experience the joy and the freedom that you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that it's all going to be easy, and it doesn't mean that things are just going to magically get better, but it does mean that you might accept yourself and find a place where you feel you have that freedom. You know, if you still want to be a Christian, you can do that, but at least you can accept yourself for who you are and be ashamed of it. And so this breakfast that I had with him, we talked about everything. We talked about Cy Rogers, we talked about training, we talked about what other churches were doing, and it was just really frank and really candid. And after this breakfast, for maybe for a period of about 2 years, even after I'd left Hillsong, Brian and I would still occasionally email and again, Twitter, right? The medium of Twitter. I would still use Twitter to, if I saw that he was doing something good for the gay community, even if it was something very, very small, like somebody saying, you know, we don't want gay people to feel bad at church, or being really clear on a message and providing more info, I would commend him on Twitter because it was the right thing to do. But I'd also try to hold him to account. And we developed, I don't know if it was a friendship, Tanya, but it was kind of a strange, I guess maybe a slightly distant friendship, where like he would answer emails from me and he would retweet, you know, like kind of respond to my tweets and do things. So it was this kind of, whereas he was this ridiculously busy man. And even though he knew I'd published this blog post, right, like he knew it, and I didn't know what that would do, and I didn't know how he would feel about it, but
it's a very reasonable post, though. But I sort of wonder, with people at that level of, you know, power and influence and success, how many, you know, genuine people do they actually get engaging with them critically and approvingly? You know, that's as genuine as you can get. And I'd imagine it'd be a long time, especially since then, that anyone's done that.
And I think that part of it, I tried to make it clear with him that I wasn't the enemy in all of this. Like I wasn't out to get him. Yep. I wasn't out to destroy the church. And I wasn't. This is like, I hadn't, like, apart from my blog post, anytime I did media, I shared my story and I didn't mention Hillsong. And I didn't do it out of respect for that relationship I had with Brian, kind of that friendship. Yep. But I also didn't do it because I at the time, I didn't want to damage the church or hurt the church. And look, part of that was good and part of it was bad. And I'm at a point now in my life where I realize that my story is my story and I don't have to protect big entities or people from being able to share my truth. But, you know, I'd hoped that I would be able to give Brian that breathing space to be able to make enough change without me making it more difficult for him.
Just before we jump too far ahead, what do you make of the great Do I Love Gay People by Brian Houston letter that I think that was 2016?
So conversations that Brian was having at the time with myself and with Anthony Van Brown definitely helped him be at a point where he felt like he could write that letter. Was it the answer that we wanted? No, because he you know, homosexuality is a sin and he still doesn't affirm gay lifestyles. But for the first time, that letter was so powerful, that blog post, that letter from Brian, Do I Love Gay People, because it was the first time I think a lot of queer people at Hillsong had actually heard him say anything directly about who they were.
Was this during the same-sex marriage plebiscite that was going on in Australia?
No, this was a few years before that.
I remember.
But it was in response to so many news articles at the time and other people, lots of people coming out and saying Hillsong's homophobic. And so I think Brian, just a bit of him maybe snapped and said, I've got to protect my reputation. And also was like, hang on a second, you know, no, I've met with Ben and I've met with, you know, Anthony, and they know I'm not homophobic. And I want to set the record straight that I'm not homophobic.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. I think it was a lot about kind of reputational thing. And so he wrote this blog post, Do I Love Gay People, where he's like, yes, I love gay people. Yes, they're welcome at Hillsong Church, but we don't affirm they're sinners and we don't affirm their lifestyles and they can't serve.
Yeah.
It's funny how they define homophobia. I'm definitely not homophobic, but.
and you know what, I heard other stories. There were other gay people who, just like me, who decided to stay at Hillsong, and many of these people stayed a lot longer than I did after they'd come out. And one of them had signed up to volunteer at Hillsong Conference for the entire week, which isn't paid and it's exhausting and it's demanding, and anybody who's done it knows exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, he'd signed up to serve the entire week at Hillsong Conference in the excellence team. Now, the excellence team sounds like a pretty great team, right? But it's not. The excellence team was the toilet cleaners, the vacuumers. Right. That was the excellence team. Can you believe it? Hillsong had a name for everything. Anyway, he'd signed up to be this excellence team to clean toilets and things. And then they found out he had a boyfriend and he was told, no, sorry, you can't do that. You can't serve anymore. So he was stopped from cleaning toilets because he had a boyfriend. Sorry, what?
Can't keep a gay man from excellence, surely.
Absolutely not. And I tell you what, Tanya, those toilets would have been shinier and brighter and cleaner than ever before.
Of course.
This is why I think they've been so exploitative. And you'll remember that stuff came out right about the guys in New York that were in a relationship from Survivor. They had been sort of, people were looking the other way, because when you've got some really, really talented people who are prepared to put their all into your productions and theatre and stuff, I mean, maybe they can serve, you know. Well, and that's what happened.
And it was so inconsistent, Tanya, as well, because I was told that I couldn't serve. Like, I was doing the host team, right? With the host. Again, it sounds grand, but it was just showing people to their seat and doing the communion and cleaning up after them after they went. And I was told I couldn't do that anymore because I was gay. So maybe they were worried that I would show them to the wrong seat. I don't know what a gay.
Maybe they thought they were going to show them right out the door. I don't know.
Out the door, exactly. Who knows?
And yet I really wonder how much of New York's success and a lot of their show's success has come off the back of the community's effort.
Oh, absolutely. And I think let's not pretend here, right? Like, even Brian Houston in my breakfast with him admitted that he thought there was gay people in the church.
Gosh.
Which is funny. You know, like a lot of straight men, I don't know why it's just straight men. I don't see women doing it. But straight men like to play a game called, like, guess the gay. You know, where's the gay? Let's guess the gay. Is there a gay in the family or the church or the supermarket? Who knows? Anyway, in Hillsong, you could play the game guess the gay, because there are gay people in Hillsong, and a lot of them are closeted, and a lot of them are wonderful people who want to use their amazing talents and gifts for the benefit of the church, which, I mean, look, good on them. I can't do that anymore, but if that's where they're at, then power to them. But I don't think you can have a church with big colourful lights and amazing music and
right.
the most incredible Christmas musicals you've ever seen without at least one gay man. I mean,
well, and is that being, am I, you know, are we leaning on stereotypes there or chicken and egg? Because I tell you what, something like, I'd tell you 60 to 80% of people that I speak to who have left, sexuality is a part of it. They're either gay or, you know, there's been challenges along the way. It's incredible. I've often wondered why it does seem to come down to those are the people who absolutely had to make these decisions, I guess, couldn't hide comfortably in the system and, you know, let life pass them by, I guess.
It's harder for many of them too, because, I mean, like I was serving in the...
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Coaches team that, you know, showing people to their seats, these people, some of them are on stage. So for me to come out, you know, difficult as that was and everything that I went through, I didn't also lose my job. I didn't lose my source of income. Yeah. I didn't lose my, in some cases, my notoriety or my fame or whatever it is. So there's a lot at risk for a lot of people.
And it's not like that people can easily pick up work as something else as well. I mean, there's so many kind of dead ends in that system. Hey.
Absolutely. You
can't just go from being a pastor to what? I mean, they would know that as well. They'd have to know all these things and the choices that people sort of aren't left with, I guess. Such a lot you went through at quite a young age. You kind of you've sped through the levels. You've leveled up really quickly in a short amount of years, it seems. Really intense or what do you think? People take 20 and 30 years to get to some of these things that you've hopped, skipped and jumped to.
I think part of it was, I think I got lucky. I think I say that in the context of finding support systems, people like me, and also the internet going along the journey with me. So when I first came out, Facebook started to go and social media, Twitter, you know, these things started to boom and the internet became bigger. And so I had the ability to write a blog and share my story and also get support from other people all around the world who are in similar situations. Yeah. And so my journey was helped by a lot of incredible queer people who had done a lot of soul searching and trying to find their path before me, who helped me do things like write a coming out letter to my parents. Mm. You know, they helped me just kind of figure out my life. And, you know, I made a lot of bad decisions. You know, I made some mistakes, as every young person does, but I think I owe where I am now to great support, really amazing people in my life. Parents went on the journey with me. They're Christians. They weren't comfortable at first, but they went on the journey with me. Or whether it was good psychologists and really good support in that space. I think, I mean, had I not had that, I would be a completely different person. Even today, I mean, I still, is every day perfect? Absolutely not. And I still get triggered by things. There's one particular park bench, which is right out the front of Hillsong at the Hills campus, where I first told one of my friends at the time that I was self-harming, and I still can't go anywhere near that park bench. It's just, it's too triggering for me. And I can't, there's lots of little things like that. Like I still really struggle with holding my husband's hand, and it's something so simple, but I just get so scared and anxious, and I can't shake that. Even after all these years, I can't shake that kind of, that sense of discomfort and the slight internalized homophobia that I still carry with me today, despite being out for so long. And it is getting better, but will it ever go away? Probably not. But look, I'm so grateful to everyone that's been in my world, that's helped me, that's great support systems, and surrounding yourself with people who love you and support you and are there for you and can go on the journey with you is just so powerful.
I think one of your interviews, there was a comment from the parents as well, and they were saying how they didn't know about what was going on in the church, this with the conversion therapy and so on. And how did they react when they found out about it? And is there sort of safeguarding that should have been in place? I suppose you said earlier that, you know, you felt you didn't want to burden them with it and you wanted to keep that from them. And so what do you feel like that relationship, that experience was with your parents?
Yeah. So look, even when I decided to come out to them properly, and so I went through everything, all this depression, the suicide attempts, everything, without my parents even knowing I was gay. They just thought I had mental health problems and was depressed. And so it wasn't until I went to this group called Freedom to Be, which is, you know, the gay support group I was part of, that they helped me write a coming out letter to my parents. And even at that time, I thought my parents might kick me out of home. And so I had a bag packed in the back of the car, and I had friends who I was going to stay with in case everything went south. And I wrote this letter to them, this coming out letter, and I went out for the day with a friend and went to watch a movie. And then I got a text from them. I left the coming out letter on the dining room table and they read it. And then I got a text from my parents just saying, "We love you. Please come home."
Yeah.
And credit to my parents, and I know a lot of Christian parents really struggle with this, and my heart goes out to all of those Christian parents and families who struggle so much with all of this. But my parents moved forward and became who they are today because they were willing to listen to me and hear my experience and my stories. And also any book that I gave them, you know, they would read, or any documentary I would give them, they would watch. They loved me that much that they were willing to do whatever they could to go on the journey with me and help support me and love me and be there for me. And even though they didn't get it necessarily, and at first it was really difficult for them, like really difficult for them, but they went on the journey just like so many people do. And today they still go to church every Sunday, not to Hillsong. They go to this LGBTIQ affirming uniting church. And they won't go to a church that is anti-gay. They won't even go to a church that has a unclear position. So they wouldn't. They would never go to a church like Hillsong, even the Hillsong that it is today, because they don't have a affirming position. And so that's where my parents are at now. They've become complete advocates. They've even marched in the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, which is amazing.
You wouldn't have predicted that, tell me.
Never. If I'd known this would have been their response, I would have never have gone through these gay conversion programs. I would have never hated myself so much. My mum says now that if she had known that I was going through those things, she would have taken me out of Hillsong.
Yeah.
She would have taken me out of Hillsong so quickly. And she almost feels angry at Hillsong for taking away her right to decide what is best for her son.
Yeah, because they circumvent that parental decision, don't they, when they start imposing those kinds of programs and stuff. I mean, that's a really beautiful part of it, is we can really misjudge people negatively. Hey,
but there's so much
clouded by our own secrecy.
But they put so much secrecy on you. And also you were saying how in the therapy they were trying to get you to, you know, kind of almost separate you from your parents, in that, you know, they were saying like, oh, your father must be overbearing, your mother must be too loving. And I wonder how many people, you know, who would have had or could have had support from their families didn't, because of the conversion therapy and what they, you know, the things they put in their minds about that kind of thing and the secrecy that they impose on you.
Whereas
if you'd known, you know, where your parents were at, then it would have prevented so much. So that's the sad side of it as well.
It's really sad. Even look, there's people even in Hillsong Church today, staff members, who are very pro LGBTIQ. And I've got a few friends that are still staff members at Hillsong, and they are the best allies and advocates. And still have been trying to make rumbles within the church. They're people that normally I would have, I've been friends with them for ages, and I would write them off. And, you know, when I was going through what I was going through, when I thought I was the only gay person, I thought everyone hated me. I thought being gay was just so bad, and every other Christian must think the same way. But there's so many Christians and people, even people at Hillsong, and good people out there who still have their faith, who are very supportive, and they're willing to just, you know, love you. I think as a human being, as a friend, as a person, if they love God and love others, they actually take that seriously, whereas without any conditions.
Yeah, it's some of our own fears can often be our own worst enemies with that whole path to authenticity. Hey, that's lovely. What sort of advice would you give to somebody that's there now? You know, really enmeshed in a life, in a community, in a family, even maybe, you know, where do they start from 16-year-old you? What would you recommend?
I think I'd start off by saying that no matter how alone you feel right now, you are not alone. There are people that understand what you're going through, that know how you're feeling and know the turbulence and the turmoil and how hard it is to wrestle with your faith and your sexuality and truly be yourself. It is worth, that's the first thing I would say, you're not alone. And the second thing I would say is it's absolutely worth all the difficulty, all the pain, the challenge, just to come out and be free and be who you are. And I know that seems maybe like it's impossible, particularly for certain people who are there and wrestling with this at the moment, but it's worth every minute to be who you are, to live authentically as you. I think there is no greater freedom in the world. And don't wait too long is probably the other thing I would say. You have a chance to live a life as you truly are, perhaps for the first time ever. And, you know, you could fall in love and experience the magic of what it means to fall in love. Or you could find yourself surrounded by a community of people just like you who love you and support you and want to bring out the best of you in all of your colors, in everything that you are. And, you know, if you still want to love God, you can do that too. And, you know, there's no restrictions placed on that. I think just it's worth it all if you have the courage to come out and, you know, if you do have the courage, reach out, even if it's a tiny bit of courage, you know, reach out. Get in touch with somebody who will support you and be there for you. And it's worth it all. It's worth everything just to live authentically and be who you are and start the healing as well. I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah.
Just start the healing and get the help that you need. And you owe it to yourself to have a life where you wake up every morning and you know that, you know, you're not a mistake. You're not a failure. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. You're everything opposite of that. You're loved. You are exactly who you're meant to be. You have value in this world. You matter. And there are people out there who love you and will love you for every part of you. And I think that's important to realize as well and to hear.
That's so gorgeous. Now, you've been married for how long?
It'll be 5 years in January. Can you believe that?
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can't as well. And guess where we met, Tanya? We met, so I had this gay, a gay Christian friend who was having a birthday party in Sydney, and he invited some of his friends and I was one of them. And I met my husband at that party and we chatted for the first time, and I thought he was very handsome and attractive and good looking. And turns out he was a Christian as well. He was from a Baptist family. Didn't go through conversion therapy, thank God, but understood what it was like to wrestle with it and go through all the pain. We connected. And then a couple months later, kind of just life got in the way. And a couple months later, that same friend, that same gay Christian friend, was having a farewell party because he was going over to the United States to do Bible college at a gay affirming Bible college over there. And so he was having a farewell party, and we met again at that farewell party, and we just hit it off, and we started dating and we fell in love, and it was just so strange and probably the opposite. No, I know, definitely the opposite of what either of our churches growing up wanted for us. But yeah, it's been wonderful and really, really good man, and I'm very blessed and I'm very happy. I don't regret coming out, not for one second, not for one minute, not you know, I wouldn't change a thing. If I had to change something, it would be, you know, making the decision to try to change myself. I think when I tried to change myself, if I could go back and do that, I wouldn't ever, you know, agree to going into a program or seeing a counselor to try to change who I am. Yeah. But
crazy. Congratulations on your happiness. That's so cool. That's so wonderful. I'm just thinking of teenage you would never have imagined all of this could have been possible, let alone.
God, no, definitely not. teenage me probably thought that, I don't know, thought gay people were, I don't know, all sorts of wrong.
Wow. What did we know? What were we ever told?
Yeah, I mean, Tanya, it's been fun talking to you and being on this. And okay. it feels a little bit risky almost, because I remember being at Hillsong and I remember when your book was out there. And I remember Hillsong saying what a dangerous person you were. So I almost feel like this podcast is living on the edge.
It is. And I'm going to have a hot cup of tea following this interview. So, wow, that's, I really wish I was as kind of maleficent as, aren't they? Is that how you say it? As they pay me to be, like, I'm just so kind of anticlimactic for everyone, you know, it's like, yeah. Wonderful. Yay. Thank you.
It's fantastic to be here. Your story.
It's incredible. It's just going to help so many people. I unfortunately have just been speaking to person after person who's experiencing this. And it's heartbreaking. I'm sick of it.
The only other thing I think I'd say is in New South Wales, gay conversion programs or sexual orientation change efforts are still legal. They haven't been banned. And there's a bunch of us who are trying to get them banned. And we're trying and we're hopeful, but it's taken far too long. And it's really, really at a point now where it just needs to happen. So there is a petition on change.org to end gay conversion. And if you type in,
Would that effectively criminalize it? Is that the hope?
Yeah. So it would criminalize it in New South Wales. So they've banned it in Victoria and Queensland. And the ACT, which are, right, these are all other states in Australia. So about half of Australia or a third of Australia have banned it. And Victoria, which is where Melbourne is, has the strictest or the strongest laws in the world prohibiting gay conversion therapy, sexual orientation, gender identity change efforts. And we want laws in New South Wales.
Yeah,
like the Victorian laws, because even though what happened to me was 17 years ago, it's still happening today.
Yeah,
it's just more under the cover and more secretive. And really, we want that to stop. And we want any church out there that's still peddling this message that being gay is a sin and broken and harmful, we want that to stop as well. Yeah, enough is enough. It's not okay. If you're in Australia, if you're in New South Wales, speak to whoever will listen about getting attention to stop or to end gay conversion therapy, to end sexual orientation change efforts. And hopefully we can get that through within the next couple of years. And then I think I'll be able to breathe a little bit easier, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a killer. Straight up, it's a killer. And there's no denying that now. We've got the history. We've got the data. There's no way around it. It straight up kills people and harms them incredibly.
So I'm so proud of everything that you have done and achieved in, you know, in that time, from your breakfast and, you know, your tweets and all the little things that, you know, they just make such a big difference and they are life saving in the end.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. So
absolutely.
Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you. It's a real honor. Thank you so much. We're really, really pleased that you chose us.
And happy Pride Month, everyone, as well.
Yes, happy Pride.
It's fun. And even if you're like, even if you're not, you know, on the rainbow spectrum, you know, maybe celebrate this month by hitting your local queer gay establishment and get a cocktail with a drag queen, or go to drag bingo. Absolutely. or do something, you know, that gives you joy and, you know, gives you pride for Pride Month.
Okay. It's all about the freedom to be for everyone, isn't it? Awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And drag queens will love you. Even if you used to go to Hillsong or another church like Hillsong, drag queens will still love you. They'll forgive you. You'll fit right in. It'll be wonderful. It's just like going to colour and watching Bobby. It's just like a man in a dress and not Bobby.
Drag queens are drag queens. Said it best. You're the best. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Yay. Wasn't that an amazing story? I'm just so thrilled that we got to tell that story today here. And I found it compelling 3 edits in. So I hope there was something in it for you. It's back to work and back to life tomorrow. So we will be back next Sunday talking to Sarah from Glasgow. I hope you've enjoyed these interviews over the weekend. Please like, share, most of all, and subscribe to wherever it is you get our news. And please drop by Patreon, Leaving Hillsong, or the PayPal to show your support. We could really, really use it. Please continue to be good to yourselves and to be good to each other. We will talk at the end of the week. Keep safe. Keep leaving Hillsong. And we'll talk then. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.